Scoville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation, text 0868104106. I mentioned yesterday that I wanted to catch up with the Bishop Fintan Gavin. He's got confirmation today in St. Patrick's in Douglas, so I put aside a little bit of time and I want to acknowledge and thank him for coming on air. I was reading recently and kind of noticing as well myself that there seemed to be a resurgence in interest in religion and church and Catholicism, particularly amongst young people. I don't know if you've noticed it. I certainly have. You see a lot of it online now. And I was curious as to whether he was seeing that as well. He joins me by phone this morning. Bishop, good morning.
Good morning, Neil, and good morning to your listeners.
Thanks so much. It's great to catch up with you. Are you seeing that?
I am, I suppose, yes. There's a couple of things that I kind of earmarked, and this is kind of Cork personal experience as opposed to, so there's the study, so there was a European study, and I think that's probably what you were kind of picking up, which then the Irish bishops had a kind of a study done into that, and there's definitely like research or data to suggest that young people are more interested in faith than they were, and there's kind of an openness that, you know, that wasn't there. So about a month ago, we had an event in City Hall there called Maranatha for all of our post-primary school. So we had 500 young people there for the whole day. It was built around their own kind of self-esteem, but in the context of faith and music. And only last night, even before I knew I was doing this, I was looking back to the video, because we got the video footage of the interviews that were done.
Yeah.
The amount of young people that were talking about faith and saying, we can talk about our faith. These are kind of, you know, from whatever, 13, 14, 15, up to 18, but no real, they felt comfortable and confident. I'm not sure that we would have seen that as easily a couple of years ago. This summer, we took, I wear a kind of national hat in terms of youth ministry. We took 600 young people to Rome for the Jubilee of Youth. We took 50 plus from Cork. Like, they've been transformative experience. They're still talking about it.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of an openness there. And one of the things that those young people from Cork were looking for was, we need to gather. We're not here in the same numbers that we were maybe once upon a time, but they wanted to gather. So on the second Sunday of the month in St. Peter's and St. Paul's, the evening mass there is animated by them. So the music, the welcome, there's tea and coffee hospitality afterwards. I was on it there 2 weeks ago. You couldn't get into the church. It was jammers.
Yeah, the poll you're referencing actually was kind of honing in on 18 to 24-year-olds that seemed to have a more positive attitude towards Christianity.
Yeah.
Even more so than 50 or 60 or 65 plus. I'm wondering, like, is, you know, after all of the scandals and perhaps the abuse of power, is it that the church is in a position now to rebuild, having reached a low point, kind of coming back stronger and kinder?
I think there's a couple of things. I think, I mean, what you acknowledge about, if you like, many of the mistakes of the past and the things, I think we've a much humbler church, and I'd be the first to say that we acknowledge that we take responsibility and we build on the gospel. And maybe some of the things in the past, you know, with the kind of the power that was there, there was things happened that shouldn't. My experience talking to the Gen Zs, that age group you're talking about, that's not even on their agenda. They don't know that world. They're coming out of COVID, they're anxious, they're looking for connection, they're looking for community, they're looking for purpose, and they're finding some of the things that were being proposed as the solutions aren't kind of working. So there's a new openness there, I would say.
And in the sense they're looking for meaning and purpose in their life. I think you were quoted as talking about they're looking for a sense of community.
Yeah, a sense of community. Like, so this event we had, the Maranatha there in City Hall, we built that around research done in Harvard University by a guy called Garrett Brooks, talked about the four pillars of happiness, which are family, faith, friendship, and he uses the word work. I turned that into faithful service, so we'd four F's, but it's the same thing. So they are looking for that kind of connection and find that they kind of get it more when they're kind of giving away rather than receiving. So last night we had a group of young adults who had travelled to Lourdes. It was a kind of an open meeting for anyone who's interested in coming. Like, and the testimony of three of the young people that travelled last year, it was more about that they could put their phones away, that they didn't have to worry about themselves, and they were actually giving something to somebody else. And it just connects. There's a wholesomeness in it that I think they're kind of searching for.
Right up to and including Jesus.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I mean, Jesus, I mean, there was more Bible sold in Ireland last year than there has been since 2013.
Wow, you know, really?
Yeah. That's a statistic. That's not me saying that.
But
I think the other thing, I mean, I hear this from the young people themselves. They said there's more and more of the kind of influencers on TikTok are putting scripture quotes and kind of, you know, onto their post.
I see a lot of that actually, and I've noticed a lot of that as well with people who have gone through issues in their life or have had, maybe unfortunately have come through addiction or aspects involving different areas of life that challenge them, that they turned to a higher faith or gave their lives over to, in this case, Jesus, as I mentioned, you know, because they found no other way. But it's curious, though, because the second last census had the population of Irish people being Catholics at 79. It's at 69% now. I remember once talking with a priest on the air some years back, and I was mentioning that statistic of 69%, and he said to me that he wouldn't be bothered at all if it went down to 29%, because at least then we would have maybe those that would be, as opposed to casual Catholics, you know what I mean? Real people committed to their faith.
I mean, it's complex, but I think if we were to describe kind of, you know, faith in Ireland in the past, it was very much part of the culture. There was an expectation that you were there. That's changed. That's gone full circle. There's an expectation that you won't be there. You have to push against the culture to actually speak about faith, and that brings with it a conviction. Like, I was at Mass, and I celebrated Mass for Patrick's Day in the cathedral. We had a full church. Like, so I've seen those numbers steadily increase. And what struck me, I was talking to someone about, there was probably 50 of our own young people there. You know, they just made their way there.
Yeah.
But they're choosing to be there as opposed to somewhere else. And that's maybe not the way it would have happened as much in the past. So you can kind of see that change. We put up a post about that on our own kind of social media platforms. Father Tom was telling me that there was 21,000 views of that. That was just one post that kind of referenced my homily talking about St. Patrick, this Carlo Cutis, who's the new millennial saint, who we're bringing to Cork the last weekend.
Yeah,
of May,
I saw that. Yeah, the relics.
For the Eucharistic procession. But you can see, I think we have to be realistic. It's kind of conviction. We're not trying to get back to a past. We're looking at where God has called in the church.
Sadly, part of that past actually was unfortunately based on fear, wasn't it?
Yeah, rather than love, which is where it has to come from. You know, fear isn't going to, you know, we were paralyzed by fear. But I think if you look at the gospel message, Jesus himself, it was very much a message of invitation to a fullness of life, you know.
Mm. I wonder if that young generation just find Jesus to be a really kind of cool guy. Do you know what I mean?
From my own experience talking to young people, they encounter him as a person. So it's not even just this historical figure, that they're actually, you know, they actually are open to having this spiritual experience, which is something much deeper. So it's not a conformism. It's not just a matter of doing it out of fear or doing it out of because they're told. It's because they actually trust this person through, you know, and we see that in the example of someone like this kind of famous millennial, say, Carlo Cutis. There's this really strong, deliberate connection, you know, and I see that as I, you know, as I, you know, spend time with young people here in the diocese. Again and again, I'm seeing examples of that.
What about the greater community then? Something I referred to earlier on as the casual Catholics who, you know, I mean, I love going to churches. I love sitting in churches. I love lighting candles. Many people do, but I wouldn't be a regular Mass attendee.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the people who might drop into the church but not attend Mass regularly, lighting candles. They might, you know, the kind of people who would get their children christened or have weddings in churches and funerals. What about all of those? They'd still be the vast majority of the population, wouldn't they?
I think, I mean, that's, the church is a kind of a broad church, and we welcome, and we, you know, you invite people, and then some people go deeper, some people don't, but you don't reject, you try and encourage them and support them, and people are at different stages on that faith journey or their connection with God. And, you know, that's one of the lovely things about the Catholic Church. That's what the word Catholic itself means, that it is embracing, that it does welcome people, and it welcomes the searcher as well. So absolutely, you know, and that's what we, as a bishop, you know, for the whole diocese. So I'm here for everybody, you know, and trying to support everybody, people of faith, people of goodwill, people who are, you know, searching. And you're trying to, you know, offer that message of hope in what's becoming a more and more complex world. But we are seeing a group, more and more of a group who are committing to it, who are kind of taking that on. So it's not just the priests, it's priests and people working together, trying to encourage other people into faith.
Yeah, but vocations are a problem, aren't they, Bishop?
They are. There's certainly, it's changed. I suppose commitment generally for this generation is really difficult. You know, it's not part of the culture. So asking someone to commit to the rest of their lives, you know, is not easy. Now, you can see an upsurge. The numbers have been bigger in Maynooth, the national seminary, bigger now than they have been for many, many years. And you can see this upsurge. We have a group of men who are discerning at the moment here within the diocese, not ready to take on the step of actually going into a seminary. So you can see the tide turning, but I wouldn't like to exaggerate it. These are small steps.
Yeah.
These are signs of hope. They're green shoots, but they're real. They're honest. They're
committed.
They're very generous.
Yeah.
Yeah, committed, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. But do you, I mean, I wonder, you know, because you touched on St. Patrick's, of course, the celebration of our patron saint, but yet the president didn't appear to respectfully acknowledge the religious aspect of St. Patrick by constantly calling him Patrick and talking about him being trafficked and the importance of being kind, I get that, to migrants or whatever. But she seemed to completely forget the religious message or the fact that this was our patron saint. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, all I know is that I was in the cathedral and I made no apology. We had all of our own kind of leaders here in the city with our Lord Mayor. We had, you know, most of the councillors. And I spoke about Patrick, as St. Patrick, our saint, our patron. And I got a huge amount of positive feedback from them afterwards. You know, there's a bigger debate there and there's other people comment on it. I'm not sure how helpful it is to start. But, you know, St. Patrick's Day is our patron saint. You know, OK, there's all kinds of cultural elements, but fundamentally the day is there because of this man who came to Ireland as a slave, who came back, you know, at huge personal cost, that because he had that encounter with the person of Jesus Christ and wanted to, and felt called by God.
But
to
she,
share
no,
that.
You would say that as a bishop, but she didn't as a president, though. And just I'm wondering whether
I know. And again, I suppose that question is a question that people have to ask of the president.
Yeah. I know. You're doing confirmation at the moment, and of course, First Communion and what have you. Forgive me now. I need absolution from you. I haven't been to confession in, I'd say, 50 years, but. Is it still a thing? Is it still popular? Do people still?
Absolutely. I would say for those who go, it's growing. Like, we're very lucky here in Cork City. We have a system where we have, you know, the Franciscans have confessions from, you know, from, I think it's 11 to 12 every day and 3 to 4. I regularly go there myself. I have to get into the queue with everybody else.
Yeah.
But there's always a queue there. You know, we've the same, you know, Holy Trinity have a timetable, St. Augustine's, Pope's Quay. So we're lucky to have that available to us. I would say those who really, and I rediscovered this myself working with young people in my years in Italy and Rome, like when you kind of are honest about what's going on in your life and you see this as, you know, as you say, not about fear, but this merciful God who wants to forgive you, then it's one of the most powerful and most intimate of the sacraments.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'd encourage you, Neil, or anyone else just to give it a chance to try it, particularly in the context of where you know that, you know, you're going to sit down with, you know, with a priest, but he's representing Christ there in Christ's mercy.
Yeah. A buddy of mine once said that he said that going to confession is like putting the bins out. He said there's a great sense of clearing afterwards.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can talk about that. I mean, no more than Patrick's first line in the Confessio, I stand before you, sinner. I mean, you know, I go to confession. I find it a very helpful and a healing sacrament for myself. And as I say, I discovered a whole new dimension to it in my years working with young people in Rome.
But when they're very young, say a communion age, though, what are they still asked for their sins? Because back in the day it was, you know, you got three Hail Marys and all, Father and Glory Be, because you were rude to your mother or you robbed sweets from the cupboard.
Sure.
Is that where we're still at? Just curious.
I think it's something that's age appropriate. I mean, I think what you're talking about, a loving God and a merciful God. I think, you know, young children, you know, I see it myself in my own nephew and nieces. I see it in my own interaction with young, you know, I visit our own kind of primary schools. They know what's right and wrong as well. And it helps them to know that. But I mean, it's not trying to put guilt on them, but it is helping to realise that there's things we do that we shouldn't do, and we ask forgiveness and we start again. But it's in the context of a merciful and a loving and a caring God.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, I kind of find it sad to see that the confessional boxes, those beautiful ornate places that we used to go before, are now used for storage. Why was that move away from that?
Well, I think it's a big complex question. Maybe you went back to the whole thing of fear. Maybe the people were going, like, so I think people who go now are going, and we've probably, you know, developed an understanding of that sacrament. The numbers aren't as big, but those who go, it's a wholesome, you know, experience of Christ's mercy.
It's face to face, is it?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, that whole thing, you know, the confession box, is confession boxes are still used in most churches. They just wouldn't need the same volume of them.
Oh, I see. Yeah, no, because we were chatting about it this morning, the lads were saying, but they don't use them anymore. It's face-to-face.
No, they do. I mean, I think that the confession box is there. It goes back to the Middle Ages and Charles Borromeo. I mean, there's that kind of protection. There's the anonymity. And also, there's a grill there. So there's a very clear, there's two people there. The priest is there. The penitent comes in. There's an anonymity, and they go. There are confessional rooms that are there as well, but they're, you know, more and more they've been built in such a way that allow people that opportunity to stay anonymous, to keep that kind of, you know, that separation there, rather than just being a chat. That this is a, you know, this is a celebration.
Yeah. Sad news about St. Augustine. Yeah. Sad news about St. Augustine's, though, Bishop.
Very sad news. I mean, I issued a statement, as you probably saw after it. I mean, I think it's really sad. It's been so much part of Cork history for so long. And I suppose the challenge for me as bishop and for us is to find new ways of accommodating those people who found solace and comfort there and for the different activities that were there. And again, I'm working with the Augustinians on that.
Yeah, you no idea what will happen with the
No,
church.
Again, I've had a number of letters from different people kind of saying, what are you going to do, bishop? It's not the St. Augustine's. It's not the bishop's. It belongs to the Augustinians. You know, it's their building, it's their church.
Any thoughts on what you'd like to see if you were asked?
I mean, I think that, again, as I say, it's not a decision for me. I think, like, one of the things I said in my own statement, we are investing in St. Peter's and St. Paul's. We're making sure that that's the church there for the diocese, that that's a place of welcome. We have a new Amos Cafe, you'd probably be interested in that. And we have a young adult community living in the city centre. That's all within 5 minutes' walk from St. Augustine's. That I have a certain responsibility over. I don't have over the other. And like to start speculating might put pressure on the Augustinians. I wouldn't want to do that. I will have conversations with them. You know, it's part, I know that that's something that they're considering now. They were very careful about wanting to tell people in good time, so we'd have some time.
It's June, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, June, July. I mean, it's difficult. You know, it's been so much part of our history for so long. You know, and change is never easy. You know,
what would you say finally then to those that haven't been to Mass for years? You know, what would you say? Would you encourage them back? I mean, I was at a service up in Sunday as well some time back. Another one in the Church of Ireland in Killarney.
Yeah,
we were going out. We got tea and cakes and stuff like that. I don't mean to sound flippant, but I was impressed with it. It was a real sense of community.
So that Mass, as I mentioned, and if someone was thinking about it, I'd say try that first, the second Sunday of the month. That has tea and cakes, that has someone who's welcoming the young person. We've a choir, we've young adults who'll be serving. These are university students who are your altar servers. You've a choir, maybe 30, you'll have the readers. So give it a chance. You know, it's something that's there. Come with an open mind. You know, it's been a huge part of our story for so long. Take baby steps. And we're finding all different ways. Maybe Mass isn't the first step. We have these alpha groups who can come talk about what's going on, what their issues are, what their questions are, and from that then, you know, they're moving back towards coming to Mass. And
you start by what's happening. Saying a prayer at night before you go to sleep, right?
Oh, absolutely. Many of them, yeah. And the first thing in the morning. That's a big part of a priest's life. We begin our day.
No, I'm saying you'll be a great man for the praying. I'm quite sure. Top man and all that. But just the rest of us, an odd prayer here and there wouldn't go straight.
It's great. Absolutely. It's a great way to start or end the day. And just to keep it simple like that, you know, just, you know, as I'll be telling the young people this morning, you know, here at confirmation, just, you know, Jesus is a friend. He wants to talk about the good things and the challenging things. But he's not, you know, other friends come and go, but he wants to be there for the rest of your life. And he does answer you if you actually have the courage to trust him. And, you know, it's a great way to start or end the day. And it does set you up for the day. Young people will say that to you. That, like, so in Rome, we had this routine with the 600 young people where they, you know, the day did start with prayer. And their own feedback afterwards was, I felt so much calmer then during the day. It kind of set me up for the day.
But like prayers can be prayers, but they'd be conversations as well, can't they?
Well, they are conversations, absolutely. They are, that's what prayer is. Yeah. Fundamentally, it's a conversation with God. And God does respond. Maybe not in the way that, you know, I'm talking to you on the radio this morning, but in other ways, God does affirm us through that prayer.
Good stuff. You're the man. Listen, thanks so much. It's great to catch up. I'm going to let you get off to St. Patrick's in Douglas for confirmation. Don't want to hold you up, but good to catch up. Thanks, Bishop.
Likewise, Anil. You're always welcome to join us any second Sunday in Peters and Paul's, and we'd certainly have tea and cake for you after.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'll make a point of it. Take care, Bishop. Thanks so much. Fintan Gavin, he referenced there a mass animated by young people takes place every second Sunday of each month, 7 o'clock, St. Peter and Paul's Church. Your thoughts are welcome. Text 0868 104 106. Pick it up after the break. Thank you.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
With Elevate Credit Union, where members matter. Download the mobile app to your phone.